We're talking about Pokemon on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The pocket-sized characters came to our country by way of Japan in the mid-90s, and a global media franchise was born. The Pokemon cartoon theme song hit our TV airwaves in 1998. Gotta Catch 'Em All was an earworm for kids. Pokemon! When did you catch Pokemon fever? What questions do you have about the Pokemon card playing game? Do you enjoy playing the Pokemon card game, Pokemon Go, or other Pokemon games? What do you love about them? Do tell all. 800-642-1234. Caleb Gedimer is a Wisconsin native who ranks fourth in the world and second in North America for Pokemon card playing. Caleb, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Good morning.
So you have been playing the Pokemon card game since you were 6 years old. What made you fall in love with the game?
That's right. Yeah, my brother brought home a library book. There was a card tucked in there, I'm assuming as a bookmark. Looked at it, was kind of fascinated. Wound up to the neighborhood Shopko, bought myself a theme deck and started playing. Been super hooked ever since. 21 years old now, play professionally, and it's been a great time.
Okay, there's a big difference between finding a card tucked in a book and then traveling the world, going to tournaments. When did you decide to take this seriously and compete in tournaments?
I wanted to right away, pretty much. Saw a commercial on Saturday morning cartoons. Remember those days? And went over to that tournament, didn't do well, slow grind from there, but eventually when I was about 13, I started to kind of get the hang of it, and I've been competing at the World Championships ever since.
So you've been to Australia, Brazil, Colombia, Germany, Mexico, the UK, all to play Pokemon. So
yep.
How do you pay for these trips? Is there prize money involved?
Sure is. This year I played in 14 total regional championships. I won 3 of them. Each of those is worth $5,000 apiece. And when you're doing well each quarter, you're going to get a travel award or travel stipend anywhere from $2,500 to $1,000 to go to these international championships, Australia, Brazil, UK. And yeah, so there is a lot of money in it. And really happy with my results this year.
So take us to one of these international games. Is the common language English, or how do you communicate at the table?
Pokemon's kind of an international language. You know, the cards all look the same internationally, so most people are pretty affluent with what's going on, and sometimes it does break down to kind of a hand sign game, you know, point at your card, kind of symbolize what you're doing, but it all makes sense in the end. English is pretty common all around the world, but there's some players that aren't fluent and makes for an interesting time.
So are these tournaments played in hotels? Where are they held?
It really varies. Usually you'll find that they're in convention centers. I would say that would have been the case for all the international championships this year. Sometimes they're in convention centers attached to hotels, sometimes kind of a ballroom. You know, it varies, but that's typically what you're looking at.
So you do this full time?
I do, yes.
And you traveled to Ohio recently for the game's North America Championship. You were ranked number 3 in the world going into this tournament. How did you do?
Well, clearly not as well as hoped. Dropped on to 4th. They had a day 2 of play. If you had a record of 6 wins, 2 losses, and a tie or better, I ended up with 6 wins and 3 losses. So kind of a close call there, but still happy with my performance this year and really excited to travel over to the World Championships in Washington, D.C. in August.
Oh, so that's close. Well, close in timing, but also in close in proximity. You don't have to travel halfway around the world.
Yeah.
Home court. We're talking about Pokemon with Caleb Gedimer. He is a Fond du Lac native who ranks fourth in the world, second in North America for the Pokemon card game. Pokemon fans, share your stories with us. Do you enjoy the card game or playing Pokemon Go? What do you love about it? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So let's understand the basics of the game, Caleb. There are hundreds of Pokemon cards out there. And so before the tournament starts, you have to strategically pick 60 cards to play with. Is that how it starts?
That's exactly how it starts. You know, those booster packs that you find in the stores, I don't really buy those anymore. I usually handpick the cards I want from online stores, but there are some cards that are better than others. You kind of need to predict what your opponent's going to be using, and typically we kind of develop a good idea of what to expect in any given tournament, and using that knowledge, you're going to build a 60-card deck with plenty of support to keep things consistently and mitigate your luck and go from there.
Okay, so you're using some inside baseball language here. So you're looking for a mixture of Pokemon abilities that might take points from your opponent or how you might counteract your opponent's Pokemon?
That's right. Yep. We got 6 prize cards that get laid down in the beginning of the game. You want to take all of those to win the game. So really need to determine the best way to do that. You want to use as little resources as possible. So a lot that goes into it, more complicated than you would think, but I think I've got a very good handle on it.
And do you analyze who you're playing against and their tendencies in what cards they usually bring to the table?
Sometimes that's a valid strategy to keep in mind. Some players usually use certain decks. It kind of depends, but most people, when you get to a higher level, they play about the same. I think there's a pretty optimal way of making most decisions at the highest level, so it can kind of be universal to most top players.
So at your playing level, how much of the game is skill versus luck?
So I've always touted to people that complain, you know, there's complainers in every crowd, oh yeah, I'm getting bad luck all the time. But, you know, the luck is kind of what gets you to the highest level. If you can get past that, then most of it comes pretty skill-based, pretty strategic. When you're playing against someone that might be playing the same deck as you, then, you know, more luck is present because you're playing the same thing. So it's really going to come down to some certain factors. As I mentioned, those 6 prize cards that get laid down on the side in the beginning of the game, you're not going to actually have access to those. So you had 60 cards. Now you're playing with basically 54, and you need to take those prize cards to keep yourself in the game. And sometimes a super important card might land in there. That's kind of one of the elements of luck. You get to draw a single card per turn. That might not be what you want. There's a lot of things that go into that, but I would say that luck becomes pretty minimal once you're playing at the highest level, making most of the correct plays each turn.
Can you call a player's bluff? I mean, can you anticipate what they're going to do?
Yeah, sometimes that does come up. Sometimes you might kind of act like you don't have what you want, or maybe make a decision that leads your opponent in the wrong direction, and they might make something that's a little more risky, but that's a little less common in a game like this. Something like poker, you might see that a little more.
Talking with Caleb Gedimer, he's our guide. He's one of the top players in the world of the Pokemon card game. Hails from Fond du Lac, by the way. Pokemon is a world sensation. If you happen to find yourself in Singapore this month, the airport is having Pokemon parades on weekends. The airport also has a Pokemon store. When did you become a fan? What connected you with this universe? Is it the characters? What questions do you have about competitive Pokemon tournaments? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network.
Search across the land, look far and wide, release from my hand the power that's inside.
Then I Wump, Poliwag, Nidorino, Golduck, Ivysaur, Grimer, Victreebel, Boltres, Nidoking, Farfetch, Abra, Jigglypuff, Kingler, Rhyhorn, Clefable, Wigglytuff.
Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all.
Yes, talking Pokemon on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The Pokemon universe includes TV cartoons, trading cards, video games, plush toys. Don't forget the mobile game Pokemon Go, which has been downloaded hundreds of millions of times. There was that string of animated movies, and then earlier this summer, the franchise made the leap into live action with a big budget film called Pokemon Detective Pikachu. We're learning from a Pokemon card game expert originally from Wisconsin. What questions do you have about the Pokemon card playing game? Do you enjoy playing the card game or perhaps Pokemon Go, other games? What do you love about them and when did you become a fan? Join in at 800-642-1234. Caleb Gedimer ranks fourth in the world for Pokemon card playing and he stays with us. So Caleb, how do you practice for these tournaments? Do you have friends who also love playing the game?
Yeah, so when you're at the highest level, you get to know some of the best players around the world, but I have a group of seven really good playing friends from around the U.S. We got Florida, Boston, Indiana, and even down in Texas. I play with those guys over Discord, similar to Skype. Pretty much every night we play on the Pokemon trading card game online, which you can download for free, and it's just the game that we're used to playing with the cards put out by the company and play on there all the time, trying to get better and practice with some of the new cards.
And you can tell that you're improving your skills as you do these practice games?
Yep. So sometimes we just focus on certain matchups. You know, when the game becomes more known, you know, like a new set of cards comes out, sometimes there's new decks introduced. You want to make sure that you can still beat those new decks and still perform at the highest level. So trying to try your skill against those decks. Sometimes we just play the same matchup over and over and over again, make sure that we got it down, and yeah.
How many Pokemon cards do you own?
Probably 4,000, I guess. I don't use all of those all the time, but I want to have access to all of them so that I can play any deck that I want at any time.
Ah, so you have like some organized filing system of cards in your house.
Oh, yes. It's all alphabetical.
And how often are you trading or selling cards with other players?
I left the trading days back in my heyday, you know, 10 years old. I think that's something for the schoolyard. But nowadays, I've got my own eBay store and I sell anything extra. Or sometimes I make little card investments. If a card I predict is going to do well in the coming future, I might buy a bunch of those, hold on to them, wait for the price to go up, and flip them for a little bit of a return.
So speaking of the schoolyard, you almost gave up playing the Pokemon card game back in middle school. Why did you stop playing?
Yeah, so when you're in your teen years, sometimes you question the things you like, might get bullied a little bit, but I decided to call it quits, didn't want to be a nerd anymore, but soon regretted that and went back to my roots. You know, if you're in that same situation, I think you should just stick with what you love. It's going to make you more happy in the end.
How did you explain that to your friends? When did you realize it was okay to go after this love?
Funny question. I never really think I told, you know, I had Pokemon friends. I had school friends and I used to play baseball friends. But, you know, never really told anyone specifically other than obviously those Pokemon friends that I really played it. Tried to keep it a secret most of my life.
Oh, you kept these worlds separate.
Yeah, all the way until I was kind of out of high school. And now I am very totally okay with talking to anyone about it. But, you know, it was always something that I found kind of embarrassing. And I do regret that part of my life. But, you know, I'm really happy these days. I'm satisfied with what I'm doing. I think it's really cool. And anyone that disagrees, well, they can go do their own thing.
We're talking about Pokemon with Caleb Gettimer, a Fond du Lac native who ranks fourth in the world for playing the Pokemon card game. And fans want to hear from you. Share your story. When did you become a fan? What connected you with this universe? Is it the characters, the Pokemon? Call in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Caleb, as one of the world's best players, do you ever feel a bit like a celebrity status? Do people ask you for your autograph?
Yep, I do. And yes, that happens pretty much every event. You know, we got about 1,000 players at most of these events, international and regional championships. There's plenty of fans, people that want to meet you, talk to you, stuff like that, take pictures. It's a really cool feeling and something that I don't know if I would have got any other way. So I'm really happy with where I am in life.
Do you have a favorite Pokemon or a few favorites, or can you name any favorites?
Yeah, I've got two. One is called Shaymin. It's a little flowery hedgehog. I think it's pretty cute. Liked it since I was about 10. And then I'm a big fan of Mew. Not Mewtwo, which you might have seen in the Detective Pikachu movie, but Mew, the smaller version of Mew.
Hmm. Yeah, why Mew?
I just think it's cute, too. I seem to like the cuties, but that's my
Caleb,
thing.
Don't get too deep on us. I mean, just, you know. So
all right.
There's this new movie out. You might have heard of it. Pokemon Detective Pikachu, with Ryan Reynolds voicing a Pikachu frustrated that most people can't understand him.
They try to talk to me all the time. All they hear is Pika Pika.
You can hear him, right?
Pika Pika!
Pika Pika Pika, he's adorable.
You're adorable. They can't understand me, kid.
Can no one else hear him?
Adorable. I like how that comes up. So, you know, we're in a bit of a spoiler-free zone, but what do you think of the movie?
I thought it was awesome. I saw it in the opening week. It was really cool, you know, growing up seeing the animated movies, animated TV series, and finally seeing it live action. I'm really happy that they decided to take that leap of faith. It's always kind of a interesting transition going from an animated series over to something that's live action, but it was really cool. It was super awesome to see some of the things I grew up with on the live screen and see them interacting, you know, with real actors. It was a really awesome movie. I'm very happy with how it turned out.
Do you think it stays true to the Pokemon universe? Does it really, kind of find that culture and that inspiration?
Yeah, they even kind of kept in line some of the geography, like the timeline. They tried to keep it separate from what I guess you could call the rest of the canonical universe with some of the other movies. It was really cool that they put so much time and effort into it to keep it true. And I thought, you know, the intricacies and little humor that they had in it was really, really in line with what they've been going for as a franchise from the beginning.
So do you geek out about other Pokemon games, you know, the classic video games or Pokemon Go?
I used to play the video games until I was about 10, but I took a break so I could focus more on the card game, and that's where I've been at with that. But I do play Pokemon Go very avidly. You might see me around the Appleton area playing in raids or just hunting for stuff down on College Ave. Really like that game. It's a super nice stress reliever and really awesome to see the characters I love and enjoy in the real world.
Get some exercise. So what are these raids? What does that mean?
Yeah, it's a part of the game where you can find super rare legendary Pokemon, and you have to battle with a group of people to be able to defeat them. And if you are able to, you'll have a chance to catch it. So really nice way to find some of the more rare Pokemon in the Pokemon Go game.
Do things still surprise you about the Pokemon universe? Are there still these aha moments for you that you recognized as a kid growing up, that this was something special?
Whenever they release new ones, so this November, Nintendo's releasing a new game. It's called Sword and Shield. There's going to be about 100 or maybe even more than that new Pokemon coming into the franchise. We're going to top the number of, I believe there's going to be over 1,000 of them now. But whenever those new ones come out, I just love seeing the creative design that they put into it. You know, often they're based off of real animal or, you know, real world application. And it's just really cool to see how they went about that.
So World Championships, D.C. next month. How are you feeling? How are you preparing? You've got some work to do, it sounds like, to regain your spot.
Yeah, exactly. I'm obviously very excited. As I woke up today bright and early, I noticed that the new set, it's called Unified Minds, the set list was released today, so I'm going to be taking a look at that right after this call, look at some of the new cards that I can expect to play with come the World Championships, and get to work right after that.
Well, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Caleb Gedimer is a Fond du Lac native who ranks fourth in the world, second in North America for Pokemon card playing. Coming up, we learn about food expiration dates and why Best Buy dates are tricky, and one more dose of Pokemon ahead of the news.
Search across the land, look far and wide. Release from my hand the power that's inside.
Venomoth, Poliwag, Nidorino, Golduck, Ivysaur, Grimer, Victreebel, Boltres, Nidoking, Farfetch, Abra, Jigglypuff, Kingler, Rhyhorn, Clefable, Wigglytuff.
Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all. Gotta catch 'em all. Pokemon!
We're talking about food expiration dates here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is trying to get a handle on food spoilage. The FDA recently recommended that food makers stick with the wording best if used by date instead of a host of other language that you might see stamped on things you eat and drink like Best Buy, Enjoy Buy, Fresh Through. And every year, about 1.3 million tons of food is wasted globally. It's enough to feed 2 million people, according to the UN. What questions do you have about freshness dates? Do you eat food past its Best Buy date? Has it decreased your food waste? We're at 800-642-1234. Norbert Wilson is a food policy professor at the Friedman School at Tufts University. Norbert, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you.
So in May, the FDA put out these new guidelines saying that food manufacturers should use the phrase best if used by on their products. Why is that significant?
Sure. There has been a great deal of concern of the effect of date labels on how consumers understand and use products. The idea is that with so many different date labels, best by, best if used by, sell by, you name it, that consumers find that information confusing. And because of that, they are likely to throw away product that is perfectly safe.
So encouraging manufacturers
to go down to just one date label may help reduce some of that confusion.
And this is a guideline, not an actual ruling, right? It's not enforceable?
That's my understanding. If I remember the language correctly, it says that they strongly encourage, and that is not a federal guideline, and actually, or a federal regulation. And I know that colleagues like Emily Broadleaf at Harvard and others have been advocating for a federal law. And actually, there were a couple of bills in the Congress back in 2016 to actually do that, but they languished in the Congress and they're still sitting there. So my understanding is it's not a requirement. It is just an encouragement. And actually, two industry groups, the Food Marketing Institute, and the Grocery Manufacturer Association, have also encouraged a similar labeling scheme, one for quality, best if used by, and one for safety, used by.
Well, explain the distinction there between food quality and food safety. The FDA's suggestion to use best if used by is related to food quality.
Right. And that's the idea, that if we could encourage manufacturers to indicate that some products are only going to change in terms of the quality. There's not a real safety concern about those products. We'll label it that way. And so, and there has been some work to suggest that when people are asked what they think about different types of labels, best of use by was one that rose to the top as the one that suggested quality. I would argue that there are probably some other labels that suggest quality, for example, Best Buy or something of that nature. On the other side of it, there are some products that, if consumed beyond a certain point, could actually cause a health concern. Things like listeria could develop, even with proper handling. And so those products could be labeled or should be labeled use by.
Oh, so use by is a slightly different variation to show that, hey, you know, if you consume this after this date, there could be some health consequences?
That is correct. And that's the intent, or that's the hope of a label like that, to convey that kind of information. And I should say, our food system is safe. We shouldn't worry about these things. Things do happen, but we need to be aware of that. But with proper handling, products are potentially fine up to the point of that date when you see use by. But understand, currently, over the last few years, I've spent time hanging out in grocery stores, and you can see the same basic product with different date labels. So even right now, you may go to the grocery store and see, a product that one version of it may say used by, another product may sell by, another one may say best by. So that's where some of this confusion arises. And if you could get all manufacturers to say, okay, we're going to use best if used by, to suggest, you know, you're not going to get sick like a box of cereal. You're not going to get sick off a box of cereal unless there's something really strange going on. But with a product like seafood, you definitely want to be much more careful with that kind of product.
We're talking about food expiration dates with Norbert Wilson as our guide. He is a professor of food policy at Tufts University. What questions do you have about those dates you see in the grocery store? Do you throw out your food after the date, or do you let it stick around? And how long do you keep your food? Share your questions, your stories. They're welcome at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Norbert, the FDA's guidance addresses the wording of expiration labels, but not how food processors determine when something is best consumed or when it expires. So do you see any federal regulation in the pipeline for that?
I don't know. That is an interesting question. I think that there could be a place for some guidance on that. But as you can imagine, and I want to be careful here, I'm not a food scientist, so I can't speak to microbial growth or what have you. But different products are different. Some products are going to be inherently more risky and more likely to develop, for example, listeria as compared to other products. And some products, the only thing that could truly ever go wrong is it just is stale. So having regulations that get into or can help manufacturers navigate the complexity of the food system is not an easy challenge. And so I would think that there would be a great deal of care and thought that would need to be put in place to come up with those kinds of regulations.
And before the FDA's guidance came out, you mentioned you hang out in grocery stores a lot. There you see a lot of variety in expiration labels. So why hasn't there been an industry standard for this? Or, why has this taken so long?
That's a really interesting question. And from my readings of the development of these kinds of regulations or policies, or maybe the lack thereof, originally there weren't really date labels. So if you go back in time in the early 1900s, you start to see the development of some of these date labels. But it was in the 70s when consumers were really concerned about food manufacturers communicating to retailers, hey, this is the date that you should start turning the product over. But that information was closed to the consumer. It was a printed in an unreadable code for most of us. And so consumers were asking for that information to be made available. But that was really about quality. And in the absence of federal regulations, states start coming up with some set of rules to guide manufacturers, but each state was doing something different. So I don't think it was ever a concerted effort to say, we're just going to cause confusion. I think it was one of these things where no one actually took the lead to say, this is what the food date labels should mean, and this is how this is going to look. There have been different attempts over time, but I think the concern about food waste has really raised the profile. And again, colleagues like Emily Broadleaf at Harvard have been really at the forefront of encouraging the consolidation and the simplification. And organizations like ReFed, among others, and the National Defense Research Council have been thinking about this and encouraging us and trying to change federal regulation. But it's slow and hard.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Troy, who is a truck driver moving through Wisconsin. Good morning, Troy.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind about these expiration labels?
Well, my dad, we lost my mom about 7 years ago, and my sisters and I were going through my dad's pantry, and we found umpteen dozen cans of, you know, canned goods, whether it be tomato sauce or you know, just multiple soups and things like that, that had in excess of 6, 7, 8 years, you know, dates on them. And I was wondering about the safety of those and whether it was proper for us to dispose of those, because I'm realizing now in my own pantry, I've got some that are kind of accumulating because I'm on the road so much.
Oh, yeah. And so these freshness dates, expiration dates you see in these canned goods long past, you know, what would you say about that, Norbert?
Yes. Hi, Troy, and thanks for the call. It is interesting. I have heard, and so I'm going to be really careful here. I have heard of people having cans of, you know, some product that were longer than that, and the product was fine. I would say if there are any changes in the shape of the can, obviously if it's leaking or anything, I would definitely throw it out. I personally would not consume it. It's probably fine, but we can find these kinds of products, and that's what's there. I would say, you know, if we were thinking about donating things like that, often people aren't excited about receiving those kinds of products, but more than likely it's okay, but I'm really careful about that. Again, I'm not a food safety biochemist or anything like that, so more than likely it's okay, but I'm not excited about consuming something like that myself.
Yeah, and on many of these canned goods, you see expiration dates long ways off, 2020, 2021, which I know 2020 is kind of around the corner, but some of these canned goods really have shelf life.
They do, and they were meant to last, and if properly sealed and kept in a safe place, they're probably fine for a long time. So they should be okay. But of course, if you see that bulging, if there's a lot of damage to the can, it could mean that there's a problem.
Tufts University food policy professor Norbert Wilson is our guide here. Do you try to buy foods that have later best buy dates so that you'll be more likely to eat it all? What have you noticed about food waste in your home? Have you taken any steps to decrease what food goes into the garbage? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with more here on the Ideas Network. Food freshness dates are confusing, and we're talking about steps the FDA is taking to standardize those best buy dates stamped on food products. We're learning about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The FDA is doing this in big part to address this growing crisis around food waste. Almost half of all food waste comes from our homes. That's according to the Natural Resources Defense Council. What have you noticed about food waste in your own home? Have you taken any steps to decrease personal food waste? Do you eat foods past their best by date? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Norbert Wilson stays with us. He's a food policy professor at Tufts. Let's go back to the phone now with Katie joining us from Madison. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
What do you think about food freshness dates?
I mean, I will say that right now what I do is I will look at the food freshness dates. I'm more aware of the ones that are cottage cheese, sour cream, milk, those kind of things. But I'm not all that worried about the canned ones myself.
Yeah.
I think we've gotten really very aware and maybe, I don't know, maybe too troubled by some of the dates because people just, I don't know, don't use common sense at times.
You know, what about you? I understand your brother was in Vietnam. What do you think about military rations?
So the military rations, funny thought. When I was growing up, my oldest brother was in Vietnam. And when he came home, when the war was over, the government had a surplus of military rations. And what they would do is they would sell them or give them to the ex-military people coming home. I'm not sure which. I think it was sold. And my brother brought cases of them home. And that's what we supplemented on our shelf when I was growing up.
Oh,
peanut
wow.
butter, crackers, beans. And they were labeled. And my parents always said, if the top is popped, then it's no good. But otherwise, fair game. It was good. And they were.
Katie, thank you for bringing that. Norbert, they were eating cases of MREs in their home.
I heard. That sounds really interesting. These are products that were meant to last. The researchers who've been working on creating those MREs knew that our troops would be out in the field, and they wanted to make sure that they would stay safe and healthy as long as possible. And so food needed to be organized and created in a way that would make sure that was the case.
How much does consumer confusion or confusion over food expiration, how does that affect food waste?
Interesting question. So one of the things that there was some early reporting by researchers out of the United Kingdom that looked at this and argued that something like 20 to 30% of food waste could be attributed to date label confusion. And some of my own work, what I have seen, I can't talk about a percentage, like an X percent of our food is wasted because of date labels, but I did see that there is a level of confusion that when people saw the same date label on different products, they responded differently to them, and that their idea about waste changed by product, by date label, and it wasn't always in the same direction. And if nothing else, again, the example of when you go to the store and if you see a similar product where it may have different date labels on it, what is a consumer to do? So for those reasons, it's not surprising that we see some level of waste that is attributed to confusion around date labels. I would dare argue, though, consolidating or simplifying date labels may actually help, but I'm not sure if it will solve the problem of food waste. I would argue that there are other things that we need to think about when it comes to food waste, and so date labels is an important first step, but there are many other factors that we need to take into consideration.
Yeah, how big of an issue is food waste? Where is it coming from?
Sure. Food waste has been estimated to be anywhere from 30 to 40% in the United States. And the arguments have been that it's about, of that food waste, about a third is from before the consumer to the other two thirds being on the consumer side. I've been a part of a couple of projects where we were actually looking at food waste from the farm, on the farm all the way through the retail sector, and we're seeing rates of food waste that may be higher than what we had thought, and also much more diverse and dependent on the product, where regulations or guidelines or expectations by food purchasers of the quality of product influences waste that may occur on the farm. And while farmers are doing their very best to make sure that they are getting product out of their fields and into the hands of consumers, they're also having to respond to quality standards. And some of those standards say that if a tomato or something is too big, then it won't be marketed and therefore may get wasted. It may go into some other uses.
If a food is ugly, they'll reject it?
Oh, yes. If it's misshapen, if it's too large or too small, if it's not the exact color it needs to be, a product can easily be rejected. And some of those rejections can go into things like food pantries, but sometimes it's just plowed under.
Plowed under? You mean just destroyed?
Just destroyed. And it goes back into the soil and can be sort of, you know, contributed to the health of the soil, but may not be consumed. Perfectly safe, perfectly enjoyable food can be destroyed.
Let's take a call now. Don joining us from Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Don.
Hello.
What's on your mind about food waste?
Well, I was just wondering about dry beans and dried food. Why do they have a date on it when it's dried, like peas and navy beans? I went into a grocery store and I saw that they threw out a whole basket full of peas to make pea soup. And they had an expiration date. And I couldn't figure out why there would be an expiration date on peas when they've kept peas for years and years.
Don, thanks so much for that question. Norbert?
Don, that's a really that's a tough question in that I'm not quite sure why those peas and dried beans had an expiration date. They should last for a long, long time, and it's surprising. I'd say I've even seen on plastic bottles of water an expiration date, so I wasn't quite sure what that was supposed to represent. So I think it's something we've just grown accustomed to using and doing. There may be some reason for it that I don't know, but that's disappointing because I would imagine those products were fine unless somehow they got contaminated or the bags were ripped or something else was going on. I would imagine dried beans and peas should last for a long time.
You study a number of issues involving food, Norbert. Why are you interested in exploring this, and where do you go next with your research?
Yes. This was an experience by chance. I actually went to a conference and saw a woman named Ronnie Neff, who was one of the early contributors to this literature, present on this. And I thought, wow, that's a really important topic, because I know in my family we had always had this kind of rule of, when in doubt, throw it out. And I knew better, in a sense. I knew that that wasn't always the way it ought to be, and I needed to learn more. And so that's how this project with a colleague started off, and that's where I am now. I will say one of the things that I'm interested in, particularly with this, is it's one thing if we say, let's make all date labels the same, or at least have two date labels, a quality and a safety label. But I would imagine that, and I know we are all different people, and my idea right now, and I'm working on completing a project related to this, is how different are the differences in people affecting the way we waste? So if someone is really concerned about safety, are they more likely to waste than others? Because as some of our callers have called in, I would imagine some people are like, oh, I can eat it, it's fine. So I want to understand a little bit more about the differences across people and how you might see in a world where we did come down to a safety and quality label, would you still see waste and by how much?
Norbert, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Norbert Wilson is a professor of food policy at the Friedman School at Tufts University, talking about the FDA guidance on food labels that they favored this consistent language, best if used by. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Don't throw us out. We're always fresh here on the Ideas Network.